and welcome to the Ski Racing Podcast with me, Ed Drake. It's like OG times, baby. Back with Mr. Ben Clark as we talk through a relatively quiet weekend of racing. The women were the only ones in action after the Kranjska Gora cancellations, and they were racing over in RA Sweden, and it was a mixed bag. First day, very windy, had to lower the start, didn't they, for that GS. Second day looked much better. But that first run of the Giant Style, when they ran from the top, proper windy conditions. But at the end of the day, Federica Brignone continued her great end to the season, and she picked up victory in front of home favourite Sarah Hector, who was leading after the first run, 0.33 back in the end, and Goop Brahmi back on a podium. And she is 0.4. Still has to wait to secure the title though, Ben, doesn't she? What do you make of that, GS?
Yeah, like you said, that one was really tough in that flyweight snow and absolutely hammering wind, which probably doesn't help anyone racing. Yeah. And Hector looked completely at home in it. Of all the people, she got herself a pretty massive lead. And the likes of Goop Brahmi and Brignone looked a little bit kind of hesitant in those conditions.
Yeah.
But then come the second run, Brignone absolutely tore it up on the second run. It was really, really incredible skiing from her. And again, luckily for me, she's my new Tessa Worley. So got me 5 points.
And I can't believe you managed to pick up more points. Really annoying me that you that I'm getting further and further away. Obviously from the top, but more annoying from you. It was a shame that they had to lower the start, but I think it was the right thing to do. Just the top section of that first run just looked just a little bit. I mean, that's the problem with wind, is when it's gusty, and it did look a bit gusty, and then it's just, if you've got the ability and it's still a decent hill, you don't lose everything. I think it was probably the right call.
Yeah, I agreed. There were some people where you could just see them fighting the wind, and there are those races where if it's not steady wind, you do need to do something if you can. And luckily, it was still a reasonably long GS. There were people, obviously, Brignone's second run was 59 seconds or thereabouts, but most other people are around a kind of minute on that second run, which is a bit short for a GS. But if it had already been a short GS and you move it further down, then you start saying, what's the point?
They lost 10 seconds or so, didn't they, from it? So,
yeah.
Not the end of the world.
Yeah, RA still remains one of the kind of most picturesque races to watch on telly, just with that frozen lake behind the finish area. When you get the shots from behind, it always looks incredible there. Even when the first run was super grim, with the first shot of it, I was like, oh, is that cloud in the valley? I was like, oh, no, it's RA, it's just a big lake.
There's not a huge amount of athletes getting their way into the second run from a higher bib. Most of them was done from in the 30. I just sometimes, when the weather's like that, I think, and you've already got a depleted starting list, I think it makes the later starters outside the group obviously are normally a little bit further outside the group. So if you sort of catch my drift, that because we've lost so many people, some of those people that would have been getting in from the 30 are now already in the 20s, in that 30.
Yeah, and like you said, it was quite a small field as well. I think it was only 52, which is surprisingly small for a World Cup race. Sometimes we're like in the 60s and 70s. And also in those conditions, it's so much harder to try and make up time when the fastest people can't see where they're going, and their skis are bouncing around and creating the ruts. When you're then in the 30s and 40s, those ruts are a lot bigger and you can't see them coming, which is never a fun experience, having raced in that a bunch of times. So no, that's not really nice. Because that hill in RA is not massively steep as well, it's not like you can kind of bounce around in the ruts and still maintain speed. You need to be a really smooth skier to be able to pull that time back on that hill. I thought it was interesting to see what I guess people were doing on both runs. Obviously, the first run was a bit of a war of attrition, but on the second run, there were some quite good performances where people could see what was happening, and we've, it's a shame Marcel can't be with us tonight because we had some pretty good performances from the Austrians on the second run. Elisabeth Kapower had a really solid second run. I think it was like second or third on the second run, and Ricarda Haase was really quick. So the Austrians picking up two of the three fastest second runs, showing what they're made of, and we've kind of lamented their tech skiing the last couple of years. So it's good to see that they do have it, although on one of the easier hills. I think a lot of times when we do have state of the Austrian Union addresses, it's normally when they've had a really kind of steep icy hill and no one wants to go fast down it. But I thought they're putting some really interesting and speedy second runs, because we talked a lot about Yulia Scheib, and she was up there on the first run. But it's good to see some other people saying, look, we can do this for Austria. And you have it a bit more on the slalom side. We're used to seeing a few names appear on the podium and having those good results. So if they can start putting those kind of runs together more often and having a couple of them, not just a quick run, but having a good day, it might ease a bit of the pressure on the likes of Scheib moving forwards.
Ricarda Haase, that run, that result put her inside the top 25, so she gets a ticket to World Cup finals off the back of that. So she obviously knew that she needed a big performance, and good on her getting it done. A couple of names that missed that: Michelle Guisin hasn't made World Cup finals in GS, which seems a little
Yeah,
bit
it's a big
crazy,
surprise, isn't it?
doesn't
Yeah.
it? And with how well that she's done in this discipline before, for her not to be at World Cup finals, is a real shame. Just not really hit the ground in this discipline this year. Britt Richardson, with that result, gets herself in. She's in by the skin of her teeth. Kapara couldn't quite get enough on that second run, and another one that was obviously looking, fighting hard to try and get in there. So, yeah.
And it puts us in an interesting spot now, I think. So we should probably talk about Hector's second run, because obviously she had a massive lead over Brignone. It was like best part of 1.2, 1.3 seconds, wasn't it? And she just, considering how confidently she skied the first run in horrendous conditions, she looked really unsure of herself when she could see where she was going. I think right from the second and third gate, she was really late. And I don't know whether it was nerves or what, but for someone of her pedigree, who's, it's not like she was trying to cross the line for her first World Cup win. She's done it a bunch of times.
Yeah, to have that
It
much of
just
an
it was really
advantage.
weird on home snow as well. Maybe it was the kind of extra pressure of being at home and having a big lead, and
Well, she's
almost
not been most consistent, has she, this year? So I wonder whether just whether that's meant that she's, when it's on, when she could win at home, and when she hasn't won, when she won back in Jasna for that GS, where she was the only, basically the only one that could carve down that slope. It was so hard. And she won by, I think, a full calendar month, I think, in that one. I think that she, that was sort of her, almost her like rebirth. Yes, we'd seen Lienz where she was on the podium, but didn't look like winning there. And then obviously won, then second in Kronplatz, where she really looked, like she was going to do it again. And I just wonder whether, a little bit of pressure at home, lot to lose when all of a sudden it's not been going very well for you over the last. Well, she hadn't won since the Olympic Games, had she? I don't think.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a strange stretch for her, because she's been skiing really well in slalom this year, and obviously with lower expectations in slalom,
Well, we've seen that, haven't we, with other
a
people?
top 10 and top 5, you're like, great result. Whereas if it's top 10 and top 5 in GS, we're like, she's not skiing her best. But yeah, it was a bit of a shame for her, because that, I think, obviously Brignone's won a ton this season already. So seeing Hector kind of get another victory would have been really good for her confidence going into next year. But it did help her sneaking in front of Gubrami. Means the World Cup finals hopes are just alive for there to be some kind of upset, and Lara Gubrami to actually have to clip on the skis to pick up the globe.
Yeah, I mean, it's 5 points. So, but then you only get points down to 15th, don't you? So it's not without, outside the realms of catastrophe
Yeah,
that
it's
it
going to
could.
take a Brignone win and a Gubrami disaster for Lara Gubrami not to get the globe. And to be honest with you, the way that Gute Bromley started the season in GS, you'd say she definitely earned it. It's by no means just a almost globe from just accumulating points. Like she was skiing like absolutely lightning at the start of the season in GS, and she looked good yesterday. She almost looked a little bit like she was,
Wind down.
I was going to say, just kind of not winded. I was just trying to think of that almost like preserve, a bit like we've been talking about Manny Fella skiing the last few weeks in terms of like possibly skiing for the
Don't
globe
mess it.
rather than the
Just don't
win on the
mess it up.
day.
Don't mess it up, skiing.
So it looked like she was going to be okay with, I think she knew she was probably going to be on the podium regardless, because Bacino was a long way back in fourth. She was like another second back from Lara Gutberami. So it was just like, okay, if I just put it in the finish, that'll be anywhere between like a 100 points and 70 points or whatever you get
Yeah, well, I
for
mean,
third.
I think if the likes of Odemat and, well, Anne Shiffrin with her injury and her run in terms of string of results, I think we'd be talking a bit more about Gutberami's consistency, because she's won. They had 10 rounds so far, one to go, and she's won four. She's podiumed in one, two, three. And her worst position of the whole year in GS has been sixth, where she was twice. That's it. So, and one fifth. So, that is an incredible amount of consistency. And again, we would
You're
be
only allowed
talking
to call
about
one
it.
person consistent, and you overuse that one already. You're not allowed to use it for
The
anyone else.
most consistent. She's
Because all right,
Mrs. Consistency.
I'll give you one in the men's and one in the women's, but you can't just keep changing it all the
Mrs. Consistency. That's a new. I might
time.
use that on. Oh no, I'm not doing any more women's races. I'll save that for next year for you, Ben.
Save it for next year. I'm sure just hear
Race one,
Marcel
Mrs.
say something.
Consistency.
How good your memory has come next season.
Yeah.
But it is exciting. I mean, we talk about it as brilliant as the feats of Odemat and Shiffrin are. It is good when a race goes down to the last race of World Cup finals, because so many times you almost see World Cup finals become, people doing retirement runs in fancy dress and people who've already won a globe just lapping up the crowd. And yeah, it's still fun, but you really want that last race to mean as much as it possibly can. So Brignone's going to bring absolutely everything to that last run, and she's got that fire and flair in her skiing that she, if she puts down a monster first run, we'll get to see Gutberami under probably the most pressure she's ever been under on a single run, and that'll be, brilliant. But we've got another week to wait.
Not too long, but go on.
Just seeing about that finals run is going to be really exciting. I'm quite looking forward to seeing if there can be some pressure on Gutberami.
Yeah, I mean, I was just looking back. Shiffrin hasn't raced GS since Jasna on the 20th of Jan, and at that point, she was 56 points behind Gutberami. So, Shiffrin was in the mix, shall we say, up until that point. So, but yeah, I think it, like you say, always good when it goes down to the wire. I mean, it's not. It is down to the wire because it is down to the last weekend, but it's, nearly not, but that's what we want, right? That's I remember when it was, when it's done and dusted beforehand, you're like, well, it's almost just enjoy the last race and
Yeah,
bye, sort of thing.
we've been racers. When you get to the end of the season, those last few races almost do turn into like the sun's out most of the time. It's like
Oh, yeah.
spring snow is slushy, and it turns into not party while you're racing, but everyone's like super relaxed. And
Yeah.
obviously for us, it was always national championships. You're trying really like your hardest, because that's when you want to put in your best results. But when you've already won, you can kick your feet up and
Chill out.
It's just not the same. We want to see these
Yeah.
people trying their
Up against it.
hardest.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, a race is where you've got all of the globes up for grabs. Like we've had years where it's been, is Kilda going to put on slalom skis
Yeah.
to beat Hersha or something along those lines? And you can get the overall, and you could have three different people winning one of the discipline globes on the same day. So those kind of races are the best ones, when you just have no idea what's
Yeah.
going on. You have to have you on TV trying to do maths live on air, which is brilliant. Quick maths.
Slow maths, very slow maths. All right, on to the slalom then. Anything to add on GS?
No, it was a good one considering the conditions made it a lot harder for the athletes than it probably not normally would have been at RA.
Well, the slalom on the Sunday was beautiful weather, back to being what we hope to see from RA when we're there on World Cup. And the day belonged to Michaela Schifrin. I mean, the day belonged to Michaela Schifrin before she even put a race bib on, didn't it? Everything was about Schifrin's comeback and how is she going to do, how is she going to fare. And she absolutely demolished it for give her dues. 1.24 in front of Zrinka Lucic, who still goes in search of her first World Cup win. Michelle Gissin, nice to see her with some consistent skiing towards the end. She was in third. She was a hundredth of a second in front of Lena Dürr, who was fourth, who in turn was a hundredth of a second in front of Anna Sven Larsson in fifth. So pretty tight. And they were only a tenth behind second. So it was pretty tight between second and fifth. It could have gone almost anywhere. But it was a really good race in terms of the fight. The courses were quite interesting. That first course was barely any offset. It was like a dry slope. It reminded me of a dry slope course. Apologies for those Americans who don't know what I'm talking about. Our artificial courses where there was barely any offset. It was just gates, 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 all coming at you really, really quickly. And that's sort of what it looked like. That was all about reactions, wasn't it? It was like sort of tick, 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 every little movement. And the second run was a bit more like we expect to see from a slalom course. But I thought, all in all, Ben, I really enjoyed that day. And Michaela Schifrin just showing us that the injury is well behind her. And she is as healthy as an ox.
I mean, I've no idea how healthy she is, but yeah, she chose to sit out
Well,
the chose to sit
you
chose to
can't
sit
tell me
out the
that she's
GS
not,
though. Yeah.
she can't tell me she's not 100%, but and still obliterating a field by 1.25 seconds.
If she was only 80%, I think how much she would have won by if she was 100%. No, I think a lot of it's down to kind of like the confidence in your joints when you've had a crash and you've strained ligaments and done that kind of soft tissue damage without tearing anything. It is, the first time you're getting back into racing, you're not quite sure how strong everything's going to be, and until you do it, you're not quite sure. So it's probably a good decision to sit out the GS, especially in those conditions. Not being able to pick out where your feet are going on the first run would have been a bit sketchy. But I didn't like the first run corset. I mean, we talked about kind of it was being easier than the men when they were back in the States a couple of weeks ago. I think RA's too easy a hill for that set. It was exciting because it was really fast and really quick feet and rapid. So you could, like, if you made a mistake, it was game over. But I also didn't think it was, bear in mind we're talking about World Cup races, it's also not really a challenge for any of them. It was very
That's
much,
fair.
it felt very much like a pushing competition. Only two of the top 15 didn't finish on that first run. That was Kati Troop and Mina First Holtman. And I don't. You can normally tell how easy or difficult the course is a lot of the time based on the gaps between races, and the fact that Gissin and Lucic were both within a tenth or about a tenth from Schifrin on the first run shows you how much of it was just get the skis going and just rapid fire. And like we said, obviously there's rollers and there's fallaways in that hill that are definitely challenging to ski. But it didn't. It, to me, it didn't look like enough of a challenge for that quality of races. And I think it was Emma Carrick-Anderson on comms on our side said she fancied skiing it because it was exciting. And I think there's still room for that. Like you like it. Not every course needs to be, mean and difficult and
Kostelic.
make Kostelic happy. So I'm like, if it had been straight and not close together, I would have been proper angry. But the fact that, I said it was exciting and it was fun to watch people move in
But
that
maybe not the most
their
challenging.
feet
Yeah, but
that
I
quick.
think you're right. I think it's a decent argument for that type. Like I said, I think we've said before, not every, like you said just then as well, not every course needs to be something mental where we're seeing an eliminator, and it's a different skill set on a different type of hill. But I think you are right. RA is a good hill, but it's not a difficult hill, and I've raced there a few times. So courses are highlighted, which is, I think, almost what we were saying about Palisades and Aspen, especially on the slalom side. Maybe not Palisades in the GS side, because that's got plenty in it. But yeah, I think if you don't set something that is interesting, whether it's interesting, difficult, or interesting,
fast, yeah,
fast, fun coming at you quick, then I think it magnifies the fact that maybe it's not the hardest of hills.
Yeah, but one of those things we don't often see, and if you do the commentating, so you'll know how regularly it comes up. But when you have the knowledge of someone's coach has set the course, and then everyone's like, oh, have they set it for them? Are they going to do well? And the vast majority of the time, they're no better or worse than they normally are relative to the rest of the field. But on that first run, it was the Swiss coach who said it, and Gisin was 200ths off Schifrin. So that's one of the rare examples where it definitely worked to their absolute advantage.
I actually really like seeing when a team, it does work out for a team, like that year in, I think it was Garmisch, when Tristan set for Dave, and it was like the world's turniest course, which everybody hated apart from Dave. And Dave got a podium.
And us, probably, but we don't have to ski it. We just have to watch.
I mean, I loved it, because it was, Dave was doing well, and it was, something different. But, and there, I like the fact, that's part and parcel of it. I think, that's comes down to your coach, I think, also plays into the coach being good, because, that is an advantage that the coach has for their team. That is a team's advantage when your coach is setting a course. And if you just choose to set a course that's, is a normal, in inverted commas, course that everybody skis all the time, and it's tick-tack, 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 meters are what normally they are, the entries and exits into hairpins and whatever terrain changes are normal, then I think the coaches have missed a trick.
Yeah, I think you don't want racers being robots who just ski a certain radius turn and a certain kind of get distance between the gates. It just gets boring. Like, it's good to train corridors, and I think, as with everything, you need to find that balance. When I was racing, I liked courses where you had good rhythmical sections, where you had a big chunk of rhythm, and sometimes you get courses that overcomplicate what's going on by just never having more than two gates between any rhythm change. And sometimes those courses are really fun to race, but there are times for it. And like I said, that first course annoyed me a little bit, but it was fast and it was fun, and clearly it worked for Gisin, and it was really good. And because of that, it then meant there was room for mistakes, because everyone knew if you just skied it, you probably weren't going to be in a good position. You had to go absolute full out and then not make mistakes. So there are a couple of people coming in from a bit further back on the second day. Emma Ica was one coming in from 39. She had a blinder, and the French girl Marion Chevrier did really well from 46 to get in and make the 30, although I think she beat her own teammate Marie Lemieux by like 100. So that was a bit of an interesting bus ride home afterwards. You knocked your teammate out of the top 30 by 100. A bit heartbreaking.
I think it's one of those, isn't it, where you're like, well, do you know what? Also, there's quite a lot of interesting points on the table on that day, in terms of people going for globes and stuff. Federica Briannoni, she picked up 4 points, which obviously in her outside shot at the overall was probably welcome for her, but not enough points really. But also in terms of getting up to World Cup finals, Laura Saint-Germain missed out, but she obviously had that big injury stretch in the middle where she didn't race, but just missed out by 2 points. Which is a shame. Anna Bucic, she was in the top 7 last year and has failed to make World Cup finals this year. Real shame, obviously, big disappointment. AJ Hurt, who picked up that podium, that third back in Kranjska Gora. She's not made World Cup finals. Just can't find a finish for her, which is obviously a real shame. Thea Louise Stenersen, she's missed out having made finals before. So Amelia Smart's made World Cup finals before, she misses out as well. So I think there's plenty. Franziska Grych misses out. Quite interesting, but you've got you've got youngsters in there replacing these, Kulturi, last person to make it in, good for her. Then you've got Jennifer Germain of Latvia. She managed to make it in by a long way. She was 17th. You've got like these youngsters coming in, sort of, Chiara Ponyo as well. I think it's quite interesting.
Yeah, and you need these. You need, like we've talked about before, it's exciting to have names that you're not as familiar with, and you get to learn more about their skiing and see them a bit more. And I think that the Swiss girls have done really well. I think Camille Rast and Melanie Maillard, they started the season first races in Levi. They were bibs like kind of 30 and late 20s, early 30s for nearly all of those first races, and they're now. Ninth and 13th in the standings, which is, incredible kind of progress in 1 year. Obviously, we've known about them for a few years and they've been slowly working their way through those rankings. Too often, you see people kind of shooting, and when I say not too often, but often we focus on the ones that the sensations who turn up, like we have done with Kulturi, just turn up and just. First couple of races in the 60s, and then before you know it, being there in the top 20, job done. They're going to be superstars. So it's really good to see people come through, I guess, a bit tiny bit slower, but still steady progress.
Well, Rast has been a little bit topsy-turvy, hasn't she, a couple of seasons ago? And then she struggled when she'd moved to Salomon, didn't she? Which I think, off the top of my head, I don't think she's on Salomon anymore, is she?
I think she went back to head again.
Yeah, so she didn't get on with the Salomon skis, which is not the first to be honest, that's found it difficult. I mean, when you get them right, they're obviously a very, very quick ski, but a lot of very talented racers have struggled in making that ski work for them. And Maillard, with her
Hers is always
horrendous
injuries.
injury, yeah, her horrendous injury profile that she's got. But basically, she scored points in every single slalom round this season. So, yes, one of the rounds was 27th, I think it is, for 3 points. But other than that, like in the teens and 20s, and then a fifth. So, good for her.
Yeah, and that's what we want. And obviously, I think it was always well going into this race. I think Charlie Guest stood a chance of making finals unless she won the race, maybe. But watching her race, I was a bit gutted for her. That first run, because it was just an all or nothing type run. It didn't really suit her style. Like she's normally,
No.
when we've seen her at her best, has normally been on those more challenging courses. She looked like she was skiing pretty well and getting back to what we used to from her,
Yeah.
but it's just a bit. She's had a bit of a really rough year, kind of with injuries and.
Health and stuff. Yeah, I don't think she's. I'm just looking down the list, and I didn't quite realize that she hasn't. I don't think she made points at all this year, which is obviously a shame. She'd been close. I think she was a couple of hundredths off, wasn't she, in one of the rounds a couple of rounds ago, where she was really close, and then podiumed in European Cup races, which with some World Cuppers in there, actually, to be fair to her. So just a shame that she couldn't get it done when the pressure was on. But there's a great opportunity. She's still easily young enough and hungry enough that I think, a summer of knuckle down and. I reckon she'll be hung. I haven't actually spoken to her yet, but I'm sure I will in the not too distant future. But knuckle down and sort of maybe a bit of I didn't show my best skiing over last season. It's time to do it properly again. So I hope that she managed. She's good enough skier, but it's just hasn't been able to get it. And her bib numbers have started to really work against her. And she's because she's out in the fifth, but 50s now, I think.
Yeah,
So
it's a shame. Like a couple years ago, I think she was in that place where she had like kind of I guess, multiple point scores a season, and we were kind of getting excited
Yeah, she
that
missed
she
what,
was
about
making
five
that
plus 2 points,
journey.
I think, or something.
Yeah,
And
and then
nearly won those two levies. Or, well, not nearly won, but was going rapid in those two levies.
started picking up injuries, and then it's just been a real kind of slog since then to get back. So, like you said, hopefully she's still got that the hunger and the desire that going into next year she can get back to that position where she was before. If that's what she wants to do, obviously. If not, by no means, it's no bad thing. If the injuries are piling up, you know what it's like when you're constantly
Yeah.
battling injuries every season, just trying to get back in shape to get back to where you were before.
Yeah,
Gets
exactly.
harder and harder, but we know she's got the skill. We've seen it. It's just kind of building back up to it. But I think you touched on it a little bit, Ed, with some of these younger people coming through. Just looking at that top 10 from Sunday, the future is definitely bright. Obviously, Lucic is the one that has been absolutely kind of making all the waves this season, and she's only like 20 or so. And then you've got Emma Raica, Xenofera Jermaine and Nea Dvornik, all born after 2000. So there's some really good young racers on
Yeah.
that women's side, and Shiffrin's not going anywhere for a while probably. But
Not until she ticks that 100. She's getting very close.
no. But so it's good that there are much younger racers there as well to keep pushing these, I guess, more experienced racers along. Not gonna call them older ladies, because that would definitely be frowned
You will
upon.
get cancelled and you'll get the pod banned.
But if we move on to that
Shiffrin.
second run, though, that was
Oh,
Shiffrin at her absolute best.
yeah.
Though we talked about the first run being a bit too kind of straight or not challenging. The second run, well, wasn't massively challenging, but there are a couple of really tricky sections in it, and she just breezed through it, as
Next
did a
level,
few
wasn't
other
it?
people who got that second run right. And it was, like I said, that's when you then see the difference between the two. It's just basically a second quicker than anyone
Yeah.
on that second run, which is just, back, like you said, back to her best, even if she's only at 80, 90%, or in her head 80, 90%, even if her, knees as strong as it ever has been, just in your head, maybe
Yeah,
not having
yeah.
that certainty of it, absolutely flew down. And it was, yeah, just brilliant, brilliant to watch. And yeah, let's see what she can do next weekend, and get ready for hopefully a full
Season.
dance card of it next year.
Well, she. I was just looking back at the results with the in terms of the standings. Obviously, she's wrapped up the title with 225 points in front of Lahova, 238 in front of Lena Dürr. But Shiffrin only actually, with that injury, only actually missed one slalom. I think she missed some speed races, which she probably wouldn't have done anyway. She missed a couple of GSs, but in. And obviously, with missing those GSs and slaloms, her opportunity for the overall had gone, obviously. She probably would have done a couple of this. She probably would have gone to her second home of Norway now, and raced in those. But other than that, in terms of slalom, the fact that Vlahova was injured played into her, not played into her hands, because it is what it is. But that went for her with no Vlahova racing. Meant that with her only missing one race, she had a big enough buffer for her to be very comfortable and sure about when she came back.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, if she'd not got injured and really wanted to go for the big globe, she probably would have done some of those races. But when you're racing up against Laura Cooper-Army, skiing the way she is, I don't think she was ever going to be able to get that distance back. So only missing one race, she'd still be another 250 odd points behind Laura Cooper-Army. So it's I don't want to kind of say that you don't want Shiffrin to win, but it is a bit refreshing when someone else wins the title, and obviously injuries come into that.
Yeah.
But also,
Well,
it's never quite the same when someone wins a title and is injured for a couple of months. That's always really obviously shows just how dominant that person is. But at the same time, it is refreshing when there's a bit more of a challenge. It might have been Not that you ever want anyone to get injured, but if Shiffrin missed some time at the start of the season and then was coming back and trying to chase down Cooper Army, that would be really exciting to watch. But again, that was very, very hypothetical. And she's been a bit on and off this year, Shiffrin. Like you said, like GS wasn't going great earlier in the year. We're never quite sure where her GS is these days, but one thing you always know is her slalom is always going to be impeccable.
Well, that is her eighth slalom globe, which in itself is a crazy statistic. Eight globes. She won in 2013, 2014, 2015, 2017, 2018, 2019, 2023, 2024. She is, her slalom skiing obviously has been the cornerstone, really, of her ski racing. And when stuff hasn't been going right for her, 9 times out of 10, slalom is the one where she'll find her form again and reignite. I mean, find her form, go from third back to first. But yeah, good for her to let come back. And I think it's probably, a calculated return to snow, which in the grand scheme of things sort of didn't really cost her risking. Like, she didn't risk to come back early. She didn't. A classic sort of Shiffrin team mentality, and whether that's Eileen Shiffrin's sort of master plan, puppeteering, overseeing stuff, looking at the bigger picture and being part of, the whole Shiffrin team is very good at picking where they go and doing what they want. And I assume that's Eileen. I don't know, but I that's where, she's a very smart lady that is looking over every aspect of the Michaela Shiffrin brand. And I think, they don't race just for the sake of racing. I feel it's always, especially with the other disciplines, calculated. Not cal and that isn't calculated, excellent ca excellent calculation.
Without negative connotations.
Yeah, exactly.
and that's right. Like, in a non-major championships year, why would you take any chances? Because if you come back early and then race the GS or done one of the speed events in the last few weeks and done further harm and then set back for the next cup, like
Yeah,
there's no
chased an
point. Like,
overall globe that she's won, however many times that she's won the overall globe.
And that's the kind of thing. Obviously, what's probably not been talked about. Obviously, we talk about it, but I don't think I've seen a huge amount of commentary on in any kind of snow sports related press is how long she wants to go on for. Or obviously, that can change every year and every race. Might your mind might change on that. But realistically, you see with the top level athletes across all sport. You do need to be very calculated if you want to keep performing at a mass, the highest level for as long as possible. Then, so why would you risk, having a serious injury when you don't need to? You've basically got the slalom globe wrapped. You basically aren't going to get the overall. Just get what you've pretty much got wrapped up.
Yeah,
Get
well,
another
she got
couple wins in the bag and keep going.
five overall globes. And that was her 96th World Cup podium. So I think she'll tick the 100 off. Obviously, very quickly, but I wonder whether she may feel, and again, this is purely speculative, with a little bit of unfinished Olympic business, and then I reckon that if she comes back and ticks off a bit more, she's only got two Olympic gold medals, so I just wonder whether that's a little, finish. I've got some unfinished business that I want to do here.
She might do. I think she took a lot of, well, I don't know how much of it was real and how much of it was just online morons abuse after
Yeah, that's probably not real.
the Beijing Olympics. They had that weird snow and she just couldn't work it out and had, an absolute disaster. It's not anyone's fault, but for a person who's pretty much wins every time they put on skis to have a 2 week stretch where literally nothing went her way.
Yeah.
it would have been very hard for her to go through. I don't think anyone's ever going to say, oh, she could only win on the World Cup and she's not a, you know, an
No.
Olympic superstar. So obviously in her mind, she probably doesn't have anything to prove. But if you are motivated by sticking it to people who talk trash, which I think everyone is to a certain extent, you know, I certainly enjoy it whenever a coach or selector said I wasn't good enough for a team. I enjoyed then using that as motivation to go and be as good as I possibly could and attempt to prove them wrong.
She'll be 30 at the next games. She won slalom in the Sochi games, and then she won slalom in the Pyeongchang games, but those are only two medal. Or she got combined silver, you know, alpine combined silver.
They all count.
Well, if you win them, they absolutely do count, and if you don't win them, they don't count. Although that was my best Olympic result, alpine combined, so it really counts.
It's actually the best of all the disciplines.
It's actually the hardest one to be good at because you've got to ski in two different disciplines. So, but yeah, you know, good old slalom racing, plenty to talk about. And as ever, the Schifrin story rumbles on, no matter what. Anything else to add on the slalom front, my friend?
Just think, we don't know if it's just because it was home snow or not, but Svennason is slowly starting to look like herself again. We've seen it in a couple of races now.
Long enough though, hasn't it?
But it's really frustrating because it's now the second to last race of the season for slalom. But it was good to see on that second run when and possibly that is the home snow side of it as well, knowing the hill really well. So when someone sets a slightly complicated pattern, you've probably skied every pattern you can possibly set on all of the undulation, so it doesn't put you off as much. But the fact that her skis seem to actually have some speed in them now, whereas earlier in the season her technique looked exactly the same, but she was 4 seconds slower.
Basically, so it's just good that
now
that
she's
year.
Actually looking like it, her old self again.
Yeah, I mean, it basically took it to the new year, didn't it, for her to the race five in Lienz, where she was fourth. And then has looked 100% better, but yeah, those first few races, man, she was in the tank, as we used to say, absolutely in the tank. When you couldn't find a flipping, I don't know.
Fairly sure I was picking her in those races as well.
And then now you stop. Maybe that's the difference. But yeah, good.
The curse is real.
Yeah, exactly. but the women were the only ones racing. No tech races at all this weekend for the men over in Kranjska Gora. They cancelled the GS, I think, right at the beginning of the week and were supposed to be just running the slalom. And then they got to, I think, Wednesday or Thursday. Annoyingly, after we'd done the pod, because you know we then used precious brain power trying to pick a winner for the slalom, and then decided to cancel it. But having looked at some of the pictures, it definitely had to be. It was sort of the right call. No GS means that now Odemak could only be 10 from 10, and will be fresh as a daisy coming into this weekend. You know, the only thing, you know, the little narrative was he looked very tired over in Aspen, didn't he? Looked, you know, he was working really hard to get those wins, and then he had to do, you know, if he wanted to get that unbeaten run, he had to then do the following weekend, had to be done in Kranjska Gora on a difficult hill when you're feeling tired, when it's steep at the bottom, da, 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 and then going into World Cup finals.
You've just flown back from America, you got some jet lag.
Yeah, exactly. So all of that sort of beautiful narrative of like, is he going to make the unbeaten season? And then all of a sudden it's like, well, we're going to give him the week off. And then he can be nice and fresh and just make it 10 from 10. So that's sort of, and you kind of then think that he's going to do it. He's going to become, he's doing an unbeaten season, which we've not seen since Stenmark, I think. I'm not exactly sure what year Stenmark did it at this point, but an unbeaten Stenmark. But so he won't be that disappointed. The other person that won't be disappointed is obviously Manu Fella, going from having a 169 point lead with two races left to go. The pressure was on a little bit, and then having 169 points with no races to go, a very happy man. And also, Ben, you know, I think we mentioned it on our WhatsApp group. How many times, anytime there's a cancellation, Austria are like hands in the air. Yeah, we'll do it. Yeah, we'll do it. Yeah, we'll do it. Kranjska Gora gets cancelled, and the Austrian ski team are shouting at all the Austrian resorts, like, sit on your hands, do not put your hand in the air, do not put your hand in the air.
Hands in your pockets, yeah. If Germany had any snow in any resorts, Strassers would have been on the phone immediately. Guys, give me a race.
Yeah.
Anyway, Garmisch.
Can we do an indoor race? Can
swimming we do race?
double points, maybe? Double points in Saalbach, guys?
Well, that's the thing. This is what, like, obviously, we've had a lot of issues with weather and stuff this year. But I think one of the talking points in that week, and obviously, like, huge congratulations to Manny Feller. He's very well deserved, and it's been a long time coming. We you know, he was just a wild second character behind Hirscher for so long,
yeah,
with no pressure but also no real profile. He just skied like a psychopath, and you were never sure if he was going to put it in the finish or not. Then obviously Schwartz took the limelight, and he kind of just stayed in the background and got a bit more consistent, and then now he's actually turned into, you know, a really mature slalom racer who, when his back's not causing him jip, is actually a really good GS racer as well. So, you know, he's had a long racing career, and a lot of it has been spent in other people's kind of shadows, whether deliberately or not. So it is great for him to win that. But, you know, I think there were fairly unhappy races that we were discussing on our WhatsApp group as well, Ed. So I can't remember who it was that was mad though. Was it Marchand?
Yeah, Armand Marchand.
Yeah, he was very unhappy at the cancellations. And looking at the standings, it may well be that's because he was 30th in the slalom standings and wanted another race to try and get into that World Cup finals mix. But he was very unhappy that FIS have cancelled three slaloms this year and not been able to replace any of them. And it just goes back to the point we said, every time there is a athlete discussion, or every time FIS do anything to do with races, someone's not happy. Yeah. So we had replacing speed races and people being injured in the replaced races and saying there's too many races in too short a period of time, that was the speed races, to then the tech racers being mad that they're not getting a full calendar's worth of races because they couldn't reschedule a slalom. And they are easily the simplest races to reschedule. Like, if a resort's got the infrastructure, it's so easy to run a World Cup slalom race comparative to a World Cup downhill race.
Yeah, I mean, I'll read you, for those of you that haven't seen it, I'll read you what he said. He said, it's a hard one to swallow. I'm not one of those athletes who is speaking up at the most, but I can't stay quiet with what is happening right now. Three slalom races cancelled, almost a quarter of the slalom races this season. When you have the first one cancelled on the 10th of December, and now that we're at the beginning of March, FIS, in inverted commas, didn't have time to find a replacement, which seems rare given the slalom races are not the most difficult disciplines to organise. It seems like a really big joke to be investing all your time, money and energy and much, much more to see FIS give up like this. Seems like ski racing is not their passion anymore. It's difficult for me to see such a beautiful sport like skiing going in such a bad way. How will fans like to continue to watch and be interested in the FIS Ski World Cup when you have 12 races during the whole winter being cancelled and only three rescheduled? All I can hope is for better next year. So I just think that's a little unfair, because, like you say, Ben, you know, FIS at this point, and I know at this point it sounds like I've got my FIS flag out, but you're sort of damned.
We're not normally the most pro FIS podcast in the world.
But you're sort of damned if you do and damned if you don't, you know.
Yeah.
You can't have a rule for slalom like, oh yeah, all slaloms will be replaced, and not have the same rule for speed. So, because then all of a sudden you've got 13 slaloms in a season and 8 super Gs. So that's not fair either. So I don't think it's as easy as going, well, slalom should be replaced, because I don't think that's fair. And unless you're going to start again, which we've talked about many times before, Ben, maybe there should be a percentage points for the overall globe. You know, if you've only got 10 slaloms, then, you know, that's divided by you know, that your wins are divided by the amount of races so that you get an accurate all-round winner. So you haven't got somebody doing eight Super Gs and 13 slaloms. But
yeah,
I just think it's really difficult. Fizz took a load of flack, loads of flack. And it was the athletes that asked for the races to be put on, the ones that were missed, which was the extra one that was in Bloemfontein as well. They were the athletes asked for that one. Fizz, yes, if you take that one as a snapshot, maybe the longest one on the tour maybe shouldn't have been the one that you added in. But you know, you're just trying to find a time. And he said, you know, it's difficult to find the time. But you've got
the weekends are all full. Yeah, it doesn't really matter. Like when we're talking about World Cup downhills, we're going to say, oh, can we have just do four at Kvitfjell because it's not too taxing on the body? Because what are they going to do another one at Bormio? Are they going to do another one at Val Gardena? Like,
yeah,
going to do an extra Kitzbühel or like stacking races? Like they're all brutal downhills.
Yeah,
like you need to put them, but at the same time, prior to Kilder getting injured, when in previous years, when it was downhills and Super Gs being cancelled, the speed race was saying, it's not fair. We want to do our full calendar, but we just want to space them out. But it's virtually impossible to find a hill that's ready. The easiest way to try and fit in an extra World Cup downhill or Super G is when there's already ones planned to go on and you add an extra day on. You can't really pull those races out of thin air, whereas a slalom's probably a bit easier to do. Like we've had other races where, like you said, an Austrian resort just puts their hand up and 3 days later there's a World Cup GS or slalom. It's an interesting point from Marshall and maybe take the kind of a bit of the dramatics out of it a little bit in terms of the, you know, they just don't care about skiing and fans don't like it anymore and things like that. But for a racer that is on the fringes of that 30, they're a one discipline skier and that's all Marchant's got. Like he's not a Kilder or Schifrin that's got, you know, who knows how much money they've got, a lot of money in the bank from being a serial winner on the World Cup tour when every result you get might be getting you some funding or performance bonus from sponsors and bits and pieces. And like you're saying, if it's nearly a fifth of the season or a quarter of the season, then that's when you're talking about it being your livelihood. That's a very different argument to talking about injuries and stuff. And again, looking at those standings, that cancellation has really hurt Billy and Laurie, who are 30 and 33 in the standings. So another good result from those two might have got them in that mix. So, and again, you can't just be only hoping what's best for people you like. But we say it when whichever side of the argument is being said at any given time. Fizz can't win. They just have to try and do the best they can. But hopefully, people like Marchant, when there are opportunities for athletes to feed back to Fizz what they want from the tour, they get their point across, whether it's financial, whether it's health and safety, whether it's points for the overall related, whatever your concerns are, you know, you've got athletes, reps, make sure you use them rather than complain on social media. I'm sure, like, you know, that's the way a lot of people get their thoughts across these days. But if you're not using the proper channels as well and just saying things on social media, it's not really conducive to making the sport better or as good as you think it can be. I don't know how much they get paid at Fizz, but I don't think I'd want any of their jobs. It seems like they get moaned at a lot.
I don't think
I'm fairly sure a couple of years ago we were campaigning to be president of Fizz on this podcast, so I think we need to see how much they get paid before we have to deal with that much abuse.
I mean because otherwise we'd have to jack in our massive salaries from the ski racing podcast, wouldn't we? My massive salary for the skills.
I was going to say, shh, don't tell myself. I think it could be the first Fizz directors to have a weekly podcast talking about their own races. I don't think
did we do a good job? Yes, we did do a good job. That was an excellent job. We did some really good stuff.
Should we have a guest on to tell us how great we did?
So I get it. And yes, when you're a one-discipline skier, when you've missed... like multiple races and it is your opportunity to make prize money, or, you know, he's left, and that isn't why he's written it. Cause I think he does make some valid points, but he's missed some opportunities and should be doing a lot better than he is, because he can't, he's way faster than being outside the 30. So maybe it's a little bit born out of frustration that he's not had another few opportunities to sort of take advantage of what his obvious speed is, and just try desperately to get it into the finish. But I get his points, but also, it is what it is. We race outdoors and it's changeable. And I know that's sort of always, again, your fallback answer, we race outdoors, but ultimately, it's not Fizz's fault that there's no snow in Kranjska Gora and we miss races, or that there was too much snow and we miss races in Val d'Isère. It's not Fizz's fault. Yes, they could have found some time. I mean, you could run a night race in, somewhere on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night, and in February, we've barely done any racing in February, really. But it's got to be fair, and also the resorts have got to want to do it, and it's cost the resorts a lot of money to put these races on. And yes, Fizz have got a big enough bank account that they could put their hands in their pockets if they needed to sort of stump up the sort of cash for winning rather than the resorts having to do it. But anyway, it is what it is. And I think, I'm not sure it's an easy answer to say we should put on more races, because you've got to do it fairly. Or just go, it's the luck of the draw. There's three slaloms cancelled. There's been two downhills cancelled. There's been one Super G cancelled, or whatever the figures are, and go, that was just the luck of it. We started off relatively even. We're relatively the same. Was it the women's that were all the same each discipline, or was the men's all the same? One of those two had every single discipline was the same amount of races. I think it might have been the women's. But anyway, it's just, I think it's difficult.
Yeah, there's not a right answer. There's not going to be, but we'll just see what happens in the summer when Fizz have their meetings and come out with what their plans are for the next year. And we'll see if any changes are there. It might be they'll sit there and they can talk for 2 days straight and come to the same conclusion that we do every time, of just there isn't a simple solution. If they come up with something really complex, you can just imagine the complaining of well, this is a bit complicated, isn't it? You're going to turn off new fans. You've got to keep it really simple for people. So yeah, I imagine, as long as Fizz are trying, if they say, look, we've thought about X, Y, and Z, and we don't think they're feasible, or we're going to try one of them this year, one of them next year, and see what happens, but keep telling us what you like.
I think it's the radio silence that from Fizz that does Fizz no favours. I honestly think that, I'm sure there is a reason why it's not happened. And if they went, do you know what? No resort wanted to, because it cost them too much money. So they didn't decide they wanted to do it. Or we saw what happened earlier on. We had plenty of complaints about not racing, so we decided that we didn't want to add more races to the calendar because we didn't want to put you guys at injury risk. Bang.
We need to get Nick back on immediately. I've just had a brilliant idea. Fizz TV news. Yes, exactly.
But anyway, Ben, the most important news is the fact that Tom Hiscott still leads the standings in the Ski Racing Predictions Podcast League. But he only leads it. This is going down to the wire, Ben. The Podcast Predictions League table is going down to the wire, because he only leads by 1 point over Ryan Ballantyne, who is in second, and who is only 1 point in front of Jesse Hansen. So that's your top three, separated by 2 points. Fizz should take a note out of that and how tight that is. Jamie Aldridge, with his late charge, is 8 points off the top step. And then Ronnie and Noel Mathis are in fifth, and they are just 12 points. It's all...
I mean, technically, they're down by us if you halve them, because there's two people making up all those points. So, yeah.
Gareth might have failed to... He didn't, but I won't bore you with where we are.
He might have failed to add our points up, or definitely added them up, and we're just still a long way back. That's going to be interesting for those top few, in terms of, is everyone just going to go with Odomat, Schifrin, Geet Bourami, Brignoni, all of who you think is the absolute favourites? Or if you know you're a couple points back, are you going to do something a little bit crazy and pick the outsider? Because if it comes off, you're in.
Yeah, because
if it goes wrong, you might end up 10th.
Yeah, exactly. Because if Hiscott picks Geet Bourami, Odomat, Schifrin and this men's slalom, that one, I mean, that's right up in the air. No one knows where that one's going. So that could be the make or break
We
for the
should make
real
the top three
stroke.
do Instagram live picks or something like that, so that everyone
We'll
knows
do
who they're
that. We'll
picking to make it more exciting.
see if we can get them in to do that on the after this round, going right down to the wire. We'll do some dramatic music. I mean, I need to find somebody that's half decent at social media, unlike me, that can put something
Find a
together.
teenager, Ed. Find a teenager.
I'm not sure I can put that in an advert. I think I need to be a bit more specific.
Unpaid vacancy, social media expert required.
For one video only, please. For free. So Ben, coming up this weekend, so on Saturday the 16th, men are racing GS, women are racing slalom, and on Sunday the 17th, the women race slalom and the men race giant slalom. And obviously this is all in Saalbach, Hinterglemm, which is a pretty tr it's a great resort. There's plenty of terrain on that piste. There are some steeps, there are some rolls. The slalom may not be as interesting because it's quite flat and rolly at the top, and then pretty steep down towards the bottom. So it's not a gnarly hill, so it will rely on a good course set. But the speed races there are wicked. They'll be really, really good. And the GS Hill is awesome as well. So some really good racing coming up this weekend. Let's pray for good weather and hard snow. Sunny, icy. That's what we need. I'm sorry if you're there on holiday or you live there. I don't want any fresh snow. I don't want to see any snowflakes. I just want to see ice and
I
sun.
mean, provided they've already got enough snow.
The
Otherwise,
Austrians,
snow
it's
for
Austria. It's Austria. They will be trucking it in, helicoptering it in. They will be making magic snow. They find snow in places that you don't even want to know about, mate.
Good. As long as there is some, that's all that matters.
Do you want to try and pick for the men's GS?
Men's GS. Presumably, we're sticking with the normal rules of no, you can't
Yes.
have odomat.
Normal rules apply.
Oh, this is tough. My GS picks have been so bad this year. Between Kranjec, Zubcic, and Kristoffersen, every time I pick any one of them, it's like their worst performance. But when I'm not picking them, they pick up podiums. So it's not fun. I'm gonna go with the guy who's skiing I swoon over the most, and it'll be Mayard. Let's go for
I
Mayard in the
knew
men's
you were going to
GS.
go for him. I feel that's like the dead cert now after Henrik. I mean, after Odomat, not Henrik. After
I mean,
Odomat.
he's on a very impressive run of form, but I feel like both of us, but specifically me, have been saying his skiing is absolutely incredible since season one of this podcast.
Yes. I am going because I think it's all so mental apart from Odomat. I'm going to go with a heart pick here, not with a head pick. I'm going to go with Stine Olsen for the victory because that guy needs a win and he's going to be fourth after the first run and then he's going to flip and win. That's what's going to happen. And he's going to go, I see you, Odomat, and I've raised you, mate.
Let's hope so, because what we said a couple of times this season, we want it for him. Hopefully he can do it, because he does deserve it the way he's been skiing.
Okay, and then slalom side. I guess I will go first, and I feel like this is not an easy one. Really isn't, I think, at the moment. And I'm going to go another heart pick for this one, and I'm going to say Haugen.
Write that down for them. Okay. Yeah. Ooh. Money on home snow.
I mean, he's got nothing to lose, has he? So the guy will be just going full beans.
But will that bring back OG Manny, fastest
Exactly.
guy on tour for 10 gates and then feet above his head?
Exactly.
I don't trust Noel, where he currently is. What is he's like fourth in the standings. Let's see if Kristoffersen can go out with a bang. He's a long way out, but I'm hoping there's some ice and that pitch will do him some favours.
Okay, on to the women's slalom. They're up first, aren't they? Women's slalom first. What do you think then, Ben?
Presumably Schifrin's off limits for
Schifrin is
us.
off limits.
I'm going to go Lutic.
Oh, I was going to go with the heart pick of Lucic. I think she, that's going to be a goodie. Or who? I think, I mean, anybody to get the better of Schifrin.
Pick an Austrian, it'll be hilarious. Marcel will love it.
I feel like the only one with a real shot is Sven Larsson. Sven Larsson. Okay, and GS, I'm going to go Brignone for GS. I think she's going to have a
Oh,
right.
you son of a.
I think she's going to have a right bee in her bonnet.
I thought I vetoed anyone else from picking her when I said she's my new Tessa.
It's basically the only reason I picked her.
Oh, that's just mean. So now I hadn't even engaged my brain as to who to pick because I was just that in the back. I should have let you go first for the slalom, so I got her for the GS. Strategy. I might need to work on that for next week. That's it. So what was so Gubrami's almost got it wrapped up, and after what I saw this weekend, I feel like she might just be doing the don't fall over approach. I'll go Hector, and hopefully she skis a bit more like she did in the first run for both runs this weekend.
Fair point, Ben. Fair point. So just double checking. Yeah, Hector was. Yeah, that's not bad. That's not a bad choice. I wonder if. I think I'd quite like to see. I mean, I'd quite like to see something from Bacino just to finish off the season with, because she's had a pretty weird GS season, but she was 1.5 seconds off Brignone in RA, so might be tough. Ben. Thank you, mate, for a
Right.
lovely time. Lovely time. And until next time, bye for now.